Welcome to the Aversion Podcast. I'm your host, Zainab Yate, and I'm the author of When Breastfeeding Sucks, What You Need to Know About Nursing Aversion and Agitation. So we are finally at the stage where we can cover the last part of the steps to take to alleviate aversion, and it's taken a long time to get here. We covered in the previous episode the B, R, O, M and P ending in prevention, because prevention is almost always better than cure. And so we're going to cover the phallic halic part of it. So this is hydration and nutrition, active distraction and redirection, lifestyle and sleep, interventional changes using mindfulness and minimalism, and then finally the two last steps, which if aversion is very severe and you're not able to stop breastfeeding, would be to undergo counselling or reach out to a counsellor. And then finally C for cessation of breastfeeding, because actually aversion can and does mean the ending of a breastfeeding relationship at some point, because all of them do come to an end. So it seems really obvious to say, but when you're a mum and you're a busy mum, or you're a tired mum, or you're a mum that doesn't really prioritise self-care for all of the reasons that we all have, like lack of a village or lack of habit for it, or just the shock of sort of entering into motherhood, I do find that hydration is an important factor for aversion, especially when mums are struggling in the early phases, like the early newborn period, or at night, and they don't hydrate at all at night, but they seem to be quite sensitive to the, I guess, the fluid leaving the body, but not getting the trigger to have their body reach out for a glass of water or something like that. So I have supported some mums where just hydrating lessens the aversion almost immediately, so the irritation and the negative emotions, things like that, seem to just fade away when they down a glass of water. And with hydration, you know, we can often want to reach for something sugary, fizzy, caffeinated, and all of that. For whatever reason, we need the endorphin kick, we need the sugar rush for energy, or just out of habit. But it's probably going to compound the problem, and it might be better to find some way, whether it's having a herbal tea that's chilled, maybe with honey in it if you can't stand a plain herbal tea, if you can't stand water by itself, I mean, and keeping up hydration with basic non-sugary fluids, non-caffeinated fluids, to see if that has an immediate effect on your aversion. And then alongside hydration is nutrition. So it's again reaching for all of these foods which are packeted and really easy to get into our tummy, but doesn't actually help us overall, doesn't give the nutrients we need to our body. And as the milk making functions take a lot of energy in order to do them, we have these nutrients, you know, leave our bodies in a sense. They're depleted and they need to be replenished, and many mums can cope just fine. You know, you don't have to have a healthy diet in order to have good milk and in order to sustain your nursling. It's, you know, it's well known in the literature, and there's lots of very poor countries, third world countries, where breastfeeding mothers don't have very much to eat or drink, and they sustain their milk. And it doesn't affect everyone, but certainly with aversion, it indicates to me some people are more sensitive to others, or some people need to take their nutrition into account more than others. And if that's you, if you can just have a look every day at what you're eating, and is that serving your body, that would be the next step to you know, alleviating aversion or just addressing the symptoms before they get too severe. And that can be small tweaks. You know, if your postpartum menses have returned, it's actually well documented that you need to eat slightly different foods in order to replenish the lost blood and to help your body replenish in that time of bleeding, the bleeding week. And so hydration and nutrition is a key aspect of aversion, and not only just because of it replenishing everything that may be lost as your body makes the milk, but also because our microbiome can affect our mood. And there's an explosion of research into the gut microbiome and how changes to our moods and even our decisions are linked to what we consume. So I do cover it a bit in my book, but there's a lot of free content out there now about you know, how eating poorly can affect your mental health, because your mood is altered by your hormones and your hormones can be affected by your gut. So there are certain essential nutrients we all need in order to survive, like zinc and magnesium, and they're considered key elements in the human body. And these things some people may be depleted in or deficient in, and we don't know it. And so it's really important, if you think that you don't have any other confounding factors of aversion, that you look into this. And it doesn't have to be a long thing. Hydration and nutrition can be a pretty quick fix, so you know yourself. And then after that, so we're on the A, we're on active distraction, boundary setting and redirection. So this is obviously not for when you have a newborn, but you can't boundary set with a newborn or, you know, a nursling that's under 12 months. Their primary source of nutrition is milk, and responsive feeding should be the way forward if in any way you can manage it. And if you can't, then there are ways to move around that. This active distraction and boundary setting is really for a slightly older nursling that has the cognitive ability and has the physical ability to move their body and understand these sorts of boundary setting. So you can start it very early on. It's more important to start it early on because habits are formed. So for example, if you don't like your nipple being touched when you're breastfeeding, or it was okay in the beginning as they were a young toddler, but it's starting to irritate you because your menses have returned, or just because, you know, starting to hand hold or starting to take their hand off your nipple and place it on your tummy or somewhere else and explain to them that you don't like it. Being consistent and repetitive and very sort of firm in a loving way, it will help you much later on. You know, it's about finding your personal boundaries and preferences and then working in a relationship with your nursling. And it's just so hard because you don't actually get told how to do that. And often many of us haven't seen anyone doing that. And often a lot of us, being the sort of responsive, loving parents that we, you know, we hope we are, mothers who are these ideal mothers that we'd always want to be, we just sort of want to respond to them and don't want them ever to cry. And so our ability and our skills and our language communication with them may not have been nurtured. You know, we may have misunderstood, I certainly misunderstood the sort of attachment parenting, gentle parenting approach. And I think a lot of people do, where they're just told to respond, you know, at all, by all means, at all costs, you must respond and be a sort of martyr. And that's probably not the way that it ought to be interpreted, because that's not sustainable, and because obviously you can find yourself becoming highly irritated. So, you know, hand-holding and kissing them or talking to them to distract them from their pinching or twiddling these sorts of things can be part of boundary setting. Other boundary setting is well known, you know, you have a nursing only chair or a breastfeeding only chair or a breastfeeding only top. And, you know, if you have the time and headspace to do that, where you only sit down in that chair or you only breastfeed when you're wearing that top and you're able to maintain that consistency and that message, then for some mother, baby, mother, toddler dyads, that works. You know, it's really dependent on if you're in the mental state to do it, and also if you've worked on anything to prevent aversion getting worse. You know, I won't say that active boundary setting in this way is possible for everyone, because it's just not. If, for example, you've had a traumatic start to your mothering journey, you've had a challenging, difficult time to your breastfeeding journey, you've overcompensated by basically obsessing over giving the breast and having breastfeeding as the only tool and making it your only goal, because understandably that's what you need for your sanity and your self-identity, then that will set a particular trend, a particular trajectory for your relationship. So trying to boundary set and change that habit is really difficult, and you might find that your nursling is very, you know, headstrong about it because that's what they're used to, and you're trying to set a boundary and change a habit because you're starting to get aversion, but they don't understand what's going on because all they've ever known is you're just boobing day and night whenever they want, and they can pinch, scratch, whack, nipple twiddle you all they want. You see what I mean? And it can be negative on your mental health as well as your emotions. So active boundary setting and doing these sorts of measures to get a bit of that control back onto your body and understanding a relationship a bit better can be a long process. And I'm not saying it's not worthwhile, I'm just saying it doesn't apply to everyone, but definitely it does work for some people. So, in addition to distracting them, you know, with as they're older, you can offer them their favourite snacks or, you know, sugar-free biscuits or a piece of fruit or water or things like that. Sometimes that does work, not always. It depends on the temperament of the child. In addition to that, we've got the next step. So we've done hydration and nutrition, active distraction and redirection. We've got distraction for the mother, because, you know, cognitive distraction is sometimes the only way a mother with aversion can continue to breastfeed. Literally, you will find yourself doing it out of necessity, whether that's, you know, scrolling on Facebook or playing Tetris on your phone or something like that. You're actively diverting your mental attention. And essentially, you do that because your brain can't focus on the negative emotions when you're doing something cognitively elsewhere, and that's essentially why when you stop doing that, your aversion will skyrocket, even though you were able to manage the feed when you were distracted with your phone or with your hand fiddler. I know some mothers on the autism spectrum, they'll have some sensory device which they can use. So distraction's a huge part of getting through aversion, especially if it's only for a few days at a time, or something related to your menses, ovulation, and it can really help. And you don't need permission to do whatever you find the most effective distraction method. Okay, you can just do it. Yeah, you know, it doesn't have to be by the book. If it's what gets you through a feed and it's not harming anyone, then, you know, do it. I have to say that I do know some mums that do distract using a sort of gate control method, which is a fancy way of saying they create a sensation somewhere else in their body to prevent them from being irritated from the suckling sensation that they feel on the breast. And this is a common method used in other areas. And I just see mums doing it as well, but that's often when aversion is really severe. So this can mean they, you know, they bite down on their hand, or they pinch their thigh, or as some mothers even kind of twirl their hair and rip a little bit of their hair out because they're so frustrated. So this gate control method of distraction is something I would say is an indicator to be looked at. You know, you need to reach out for support if you're struggling that badly. So that's distraction, and now we're on the L, lifestyle and sleep. So I'm not going to go into this in much detail because, you know, I can't sit here and tell you in a 10-minute podcast how to improve your sleep and how to change your lifestyle. I have covered it a lot in my book because sleep is a huge factor for, you know, all humans. Some can cope better than others, but when you think about aversion, actually a lot of mums only get aversion when they're very sleep deprived and when they've had a lot of broken nights. And in addition to that, you know, people are just angrier when they're sleep deprived, and they'll be using their phone to distract themselves at night, for example, if they get aversion. But both the nocturnal adrenaline from the aversion happening and also the blue light from the screen, that's going to inhibit you getting to sleep and also staying asleep, because your sympathetic nervous system is basically online and you're in a stressed state. So if that continually is activated and the stress response is continually triggered, you're going to have a negative association to breastfeeding, and that's going to be associated to sleep in the bedroom, and there'll be angst and dread about, you know, the bedtime routine or the boob to sleep marathon. And this is something that really needs to be addressed, and there's so many areas. You know, there's like anxiety in terms of your headspace. What state are you at, and can you address that with hypnosis or meditation or mindfulness? And then there's sleep hygiene, which is something I learned a lot from Lindsay Hookway, because she covers a lot of literature about what we need to do to prepare for a good sleep environment and for a good sleeping night, essentially. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't start out of nowhere. Every day you've got to start a couple of hours earlier than your bedtime, and you've got to be consistent. And it can include lots of things like, you know, having the same thing happen in the same order every day in the same way. And the wind down for sleep is really important. And all of these things, like sleep hygiene practices for yourself, they're all a lifestyle change. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I was in a position to do any of those necessarily when I had aversion, although I do remember when it was at its worst. The only way I could sleep, the only way, was using a short sleep hypnosis, which was free on YouTube. And I would literally not be able to fall asleep unless I had that hypnosis on afterwards. So, and it became part of my routine day and night. I would have to use it for months. So I was obviously not in a great state, and it did help me, and I used it out of desperation. But ideally, you would want to address your lifestyle changes and sleep hygiene essentially a lot before it gets that bad. But if you do, it can actually really help with aversion. And so that's lifestyle and sleep. So now we're at the I in bromphalic, right near the end. We're looking at interventions. So this is mindfulness and minimalism. So I noticed a lot of things as I supported mums, and it's essentially that if you're in a place where you can understand your aversion and you can sort of control what's happening, so it's not gotten to a severe stage, it can be really important to practice very basic tenets of mindfulness. So there was a neuroanatomist, she hypothesized that there's a 90-second rule in terms of your neurological responses to something. Basically, your negative knee-jerk reaction happens on a neurobiological level for 90 seconds. And there's actually, the majority of people have a tendency to ruminate, which means they continue the negative chatter, they continue the negative story in their head, they perpetuate the negative emotions, and they will essentially continue it, the negative response, for a lot longer than 90 seconds. And This is something we all do, and it is actually, I'm not saying it's impossible to stop. It depends on what your triggers for aversion are and how you're supported and what your actual living situation is, and whether you do have any means for respite, and whether you do have any means, any space for self-reflection, you know, to think, am I doing this? You know, am I replaying something in my head, like a birth trauma or the why me story? Why does this always happen to me? And or why is everything so bad? And why is my nursing like this? And, you know, that kind of self-reflection can only come when you're in a place to have some space to do it, you know. But it's a very important part of being able to identify when you're not in that relaxed state and how to get back into what they call the parasympathetic state of relaxation. So you can override that by using things like mindfulness tools like Headspace, which has a free course. It's just an app, and that can actually help you curb your responses so your negative emotions don't seem as bad. And that's why mindfulness can really, really help some mums. And it's again about habit, about practice, and about having people around you that understand that. So in addition to that, is something I've noticed as well, which I cover in my book, is about the concept of minimalism. So is aversion for you anything to do with all the external factors in your life that you can't control or that don't serve you? So is that people that don't serve you, habits that don't serve you, stuff and items and objects that don't serve you? And embracing the idea of minimalism can really help make the time and space to breastfeed, essentially. And that again is a path you go down, but recognizing it can actually help address aversion, because it allows you the time and space to be the person that you want to be able to allow yourself to say no, because you're putting yourself first, to make your environment, if you're just going to talk about it in an object-based minimalism approach, where you get rid of things that are just, you know, clogging up your environment. It allows your environment to have that space for you to breathe, to look a bit more aesthetic, to be a bit more pleasing. And that reinforces a more positive environment, instead of, you know, all you can see is the clothes that you don't fit into anymore, or the shoes that you don't wear because you don't go out with your friends, or the objects that you have on show but perhaps need fixing and you haven't gotten round to it, or just the general lack of any, you know, worktop surfaces in the kitchen for you to do anything, or all the dishes, whatever it is. Adopting a sort of minimalism approach in concept can really help. Even parenting theories, I cover this in my book, you know, if they don't suit you or your family, let them go. Simplify your world. You need to do what works for you. But in order to do that, you need to know what works for you. And you won't know that unless you've sort of shed all the other stuff that's clogging up your mind. And it's a bit tricky, because social media can offer you a lot of information, but there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of setting the bar too high, so we can't reach it. So we're on the last two C's now. So counselling and other therapies. Basically, if your aversion is really severe, then what my position is on it is that it's actually not only to do with the breastfeeding. So while the breastfeeding is triggering the negative emotions, actually it's something else deeper, something else that you can address often with somebody else, like a counsellor, or using some sort of therapy or intervention. So if your aversion is severe and not going away, and you've tried the steps in Bromphalic that I've covered, so the BROMPH, all of these different things, and it's actually not going away and it's getting worse, you need to have some sort of objective insight into what's going on and why you're being triggered. And so in this situation, counseling based therapies can be a way to help aversion. So talking therapies like solution-focused approaches and methods like the technical rewind techniques to combat stress and anxiety can work. Rebirthing or helping you look at your birth trauma, using different types of specific techniques. Some people use tapping, some people use CBT. It depends what you have access to. There are some things that are free online which you can get to straight away, like for example the tapping, the emotional freedom technique. It's non-invasive, it has immediate results. And then there's more long-term ones like, I guess, psychoanalysis or having access to somebody that can help you look at your deeper wounds and triggers and why breastfeeding is sort of bringing these negative emotions to the fore. And then there's also alongside that counselling for pain management, because it's actually, you know, it's a thing. Even though we're not supposed to be breastfeeding in pain, a lot of women I know are doing it continually, whether it's because they're breastfeeding through pregnancy or breastfeeding through oral restrictions or breastfeeding because they have sensitive nipples or Raynaud's or for whatever reason, and they're either not able to stop breastfeeding or they don't want to stop breastfeeding or their nursling doesn't want to stop breastfeeding, then they're continually on some sort of pain. And actually there's sort of amazing research that shows that negative emotions can actually cause physical pain. And we do know that physical pain can cause negative emotions. So it's a very sort of symbiotic, it's very interlinked, pain and negative emotions. So this is another area where counselling can help. So counselling in general for what's going on with you, counselling for pain, and essentially intervention therapies for trauma. So I do cover this a lot because I have covered in my book about how those who are survivors of previous sexual abuse or childhood neglect and trauma, they seem to have aversion. They're at risk in a way. I think it's a risk factor for developing aversion when they're breastfeeding. So therapies for trauma like EMDR, that's one. I think it's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, something like that. It's a very well-known therapy now, and it's been used in many clinical trials to show its effectiveness in dealing with emotional trauma and adverse life experiences. So I know some moms who've tried EDMR with their aversion and found it really helpful. And then lastly, we're going to look at cessation of breastfeeding. So you've tried all of those things and how to alleviate aversion at the last stop. I'm trying to use a train analogy, you know, the last station on the line is to wean. So this doesn't mean that it's overnight by any means. Weaning is a process that takes a long time for many, many mother, baby, mother, toddler, dyads. But that sometimes is the only way to get rid of aversion. So it's not easy by any means, and severe aversion is a sort of catch-22. It's heartbreaking, you know. There's no possible solution for a long period of time because the mother uses breastfeeding. We use it for everything, you know. So to wean can suddenly create a whole bunch of problems. But when it comes to the point when weaning seems to be necessary, it's an option you should explore with whoever you can talk to about, just to see if it's right for you, because sometimes you think it's going to solve all your problems and it doesn't. So it shouldn't be done under, you know, assumptions that it's easy to do, because it's not always easy to wean, or that it's better to do necessarily, or that if your nursling is young that it's going to be easy for them to take a bottle, because many of them refuse. And then also just aspects about sleep, you know, if you wean them, you might find that your nursling goes to sleep much easier, because if you think about aversion and all the negative associations with breastfeeding and also how that spills over to sleep. If you wean, then all of a sudden you've stopped that repetitive negative association, and it might be the case that after it redresses and rebalances that you and your nursing sleep better, right? But then there's always going to be that rough patch in between where you're both getting used to not breastfeeding, you know, and finding other ways around it. But it's definitely an option, and you are within your rights always to wean. But it's about understanding why you're doing it and understanding how to do it, and having a weaning process that isn't traumatic, essentially. Understanding tears and crying, understanding changes in habits. And it's something that I cover a lot in my book, because I really believe that breastfeeding support should include weaning support, because you can be weaning for many months and you're sort of still breastfeeding, and you need breastfeeding support throughout it, even though you might be trying to reduce feeds or change the way you do things, or generally wean, you know, stop breastfeeding altogether. So that's the end of Bromphalic, and it's sort of gone on a bit. I'm really sorry, but I'm just conscious that I haven't covered it, and I know that there's some people who can't afford the book or that don't know where to start, and I wanted to make sure that the podcast covered the basics of how to go about tackling aversion. So I hope that was useful. I in my head, I think I can do some amazing podcasts and talk to people and interview them about their aversion and talk to professionals and see what they think can help. But I've obviously been super crap with being consistent with these. But in the meantime, I hope this is useful, and I'll see you back here when I can get on to record another one.